This is not actually a transportation investment. They're talking about, I mean, they're billing it as such, but if you really wanted to increase connectivity between Portland and Vancouver or Portland and St. John's, run the bus more frequently. Like, the bus is actually more cost efficient. It actually is serving working class folks. You can run it at all times of the day, or just make that bus more efficient by putting extra bus lanes in, so those buses don't get stuck in traffic.
That is a valid point, Aaron. I got to run right now. One more time, what's the website?
www.nomorefreewayspdx. And I'm supportive of Frog Ferry. We need to make sure that we are addressing our priority needs first.
No, understand. We take many angles at the same problems. Thank you again, Aaron, for your time. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
Past episodes can be heard wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you to the letter J, Cody Robertson, for original music. My name is Trevor, and I can be reached, trevor@timeslikenow.com. I look forward to speaking with you next time.
Hi, it's Joseph with Art Focus on KABU. Don't forget, we're in the middle of our end of the year drive, so please show your support by becoming a member today at kabu.fm/give. Thanks.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Mary Weaver Chapin. She's the curator of prints and drawings at the Portland Art Museum, and she's here on Zoom talking about private lives, home and family in the arts of the Nabi, 1889 to 1900. And it's running now through January 23rd. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus again, Mary.
Oh, you're welcome, Joseph. It's really great to be here with you, and I've missed our chats during COVID.
So, Mary, why were they called the Nabi, N-A-B-I?
The Nabi was a nickname that they adopted for themselves. It comes from the Hebrew word for prophet, and they wanted to be prophets of a new art. They were rebelling against Impressionism. They were rebelling against academic art, and they saw themselves as sort of a band of brothers who could take this next step into symbolism and whatever comes next. So although they never exhibited under this title, they are known today by this group name.
This is an amazing show, 150 pieces, a lot of lithographs, drawings, paintings. It's nearly all 2D work, and it's by four artists from Paris in the 1890s. And there are four photos of the guys. They were buddies, they worked together, they were in and out of each other's houses, they all had kids together. And the four photos, they look like, to me, they're like John, Paul, George, and Ringo. Each one had a little different personality. So just tell us in a thumbnail sketch of each person who the four are.
Oh, that's a wonderful way of putting it, Joseph, because this is also a story about their friendship. The first artist I should mention is Maurice Denis. He was the youngest of the group, and he was also the great theoretician of the group. So he wrote lots and lots of articles about their philosophy and what they were trying to accomplish. The next member I would introduce is Pierre Bonnard. And Bonnard was known for curious, intense gaze. He saw everything that was going on around him. He was particularly attentive to the lives of children and pets, and he approached art with a very humorous and thoughtful point of view. He was very, very close with Edouard Vuillard, who was from a working class family. Vuillard lived with his mother almost his entire life, and she was a seamstress. So we see lots of images of women sewing and private interiors where he spent much of his life with his mother and his sister. And Vuillard, in turn, was very good friends with Félix Vallotton. And Vallotton is a little bit of an outsider in the sense that he was a bit older than these other three men, and he was Swiss. So they referred to him as the foreigner. And you'll see when you visit the show that his style is quite different. So each of these four artists are approaching the same subject matter, home and family, but they're bringing different gifts and different visions.
As you go in through the show, there's a lot of Barnard work. Right at the beginning, there are three paintings that are next to each other, and they're showing the same kind of people from different perspectives. Just say who's in the paintings. These are domestic scenes of women and children eating.
Yes, on one of the first walls that visitors encounter, you see a sweep of paintings of people dining together. The first three are by Pierre Bonnard, and he found great inspiration in sort of the daily lives of his mother, his sister, and his sister's children. So these are not great moments in time. They're just these little sort of whispers of daily life, what Bonnard referred to as the modest acts of life. And then next to these three paintings is a fourth by Edouard Vuillard. And again, it depicts a similar scene of a grandmother, in this case, Vuillard's own mother, feeding her infant granddaughter. So the subjects closest at hand were often the most meaningful for these artists.
On the cover of the book, actually, the catalog, Private Lives, is this checkered dress that I think it's a child wearing, is playing with a dog. Several of the people in these paintings that have this, yeah, it's like blue and white squares or red and white squares, and they're painted in a very sort of unrealistic, they're not really trying to capture the fabric flow, they're more trying to place the coloring and the pattern almost in a flat manner. It doesn't really form to the body. Could you explain what they were doing in their sort of vision?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Joseph. The wonderful plaids and checks in this exhibition really leap out. And Bonnard was particularly fond of the checkered clothing of his sister and his nieces and nephews. This was, you know, typical Parisian fashion at the time, but it was also influenced by Japanese design. And this is exactly the moment when Japanese ukiyo-e prints were entering the Parisian market. So these artists were not trying to take realistic depictions of what they saw. They were really meant to evoke emotion. Bonnard used the patterns and the checkers to suggest this richness of layering, of pattern, of textile, but they also sort of freeze the figures in place. As you mentioned, they don't necessarily conform to anatomy, but they become just one more plane in these very flattened pictures.
I think maybe they were seeing in these Japanese prints the blank kind of background. You'd have a figure kind of floating in space. But in this case, they're often floating against wallpaper, which instead is another, it's kind of a new thing. Like people could have really nice wallpaper. These are middle-class people. So what's the playing in the background? When they do wallpaper, what are they really trying to do?
Well, I think it's, again, this idea of collapsing space. So Maurice Denis, who I mentioned was the great theoretician of the group, made a very famous pronouncement. And he said, remember, before a painting is a picture of a war horse or a nude or a landscape, it is simply an arrangement of colors on a flat surface. So that, in a way, Denis predicts all of 20th century art right there in the 1890s when he says that. And so they collapse the space and they are depicting these wallpapers and these textured patterns of women's clothing. It's really this artistic blend of patterning that becomes either very visually rich or it can become quite claustrophobic. And they weave that into this total environment where the figures really are absorbed by their surroundings.
There's a series of prints in that room, lithographs, and they depict similar rooms, and in cases they're cropped, and a big lamp is visible on one side and then the other half of it is on another print. Well, these prints were made to be looked at in a portfolio rather than hung, is that right?
That's absolutely right. We think of framing our fine art prints, putting them on the wall. At the time, it would have been more common to keep them in a folder and kind of pull them out one by one. And I really hope visitors will spend some time with this group of prints you mentioned. It's from a series called landscapes and interiors. It's really one of the high points of color lithography in the 19th century, and really very, very daring for its time. I find them just extraordinary. And when I'm going through the exhibition, I notice that people linger along that wall for quite some time.
I should point out that a lot of these images are very abstract. You know, they're like half completed, or they look faded, but they're not intended to be faded. There are others that are very faint later on. The colors look washed out, but this is all deliberate. This is how they wanted people to see the world.
Yes, it's something I've needed to talk about with a lot of visitors, is that what you're seeing is some of these lithographs are deeply saturated, rich autumnal colors. Others are so faint that you almost wonder if there's anything there or if they've faded. And these were all our deliberate artistic choices. And it shows the painter, the artist's skill in working across a really wide range of hue, but it also points to advances in color lithography. And it really shows the range that they could coax out of the lithographic stone. Some are very, very pale and muted. Some of them are rich and saturated. And I think it just really speaks to this whole spectrum of emotion and feeling that they could evoke using color lithography.
There is one picture. It's a woman sitting down facing the viewer, and then girl hunched over to the left. And the side wall, it almost looks like camo. It's green and brown and gray. And that side changes as you go into the background. So it's not totally flat. There is depth. What are they painting here? Or who painted this? And what's the idea? Because they're not painting models. They're painting family members, but they're not saying, sit here for 4 hours. They're kind of paint just from memory, right?
Oh, that's absolutely right, Joseph. The painting you're referring to is by Edouard Vuillard, and it's entitled Interior or Portrait of the Artist's Mother and Sister. And it's a small painting, but it's just a jewel in terms of the colors, but also in terms of the psychological depth that it examines. So we see the artist's mother seated in a room and his sister sort of pressed against the wall next to her. And even if you have no background with these artists, visitors immediately sense that this is not a happy moment, that it's almost as if we are walking into some sort of family argument or drama. We can sense the tension. And we know that it's his mother and sister. He writes about it. But as you say, he never posed people. He would make sketches. And all four of these artists preferred to work from memory. And that's because they weren't trying to make these photographically realistic pictures, but they were trying to evoke the sensation or a memory of the feelings of a scene. So it's both a portrait of this family, Vuillard's mother, sister, but it's also very, very universal. They could be anyone.
And what wasn't Interior the name of a play that they had seen at the time?
Yes, these artists were very involved with symbolist theater in Paris. So this was a great moment when playwrights like Ibsen and Maeterlinck were the darlings of the stage. And symbolist theater tended to be quite gloomy and pessimistic and full of charged moments between characters. And in a lot of these works, Joseph, you get the sense that we may have stumbled into an act of a symbolist drama. And it kind of speaks to how music, drama, art, all these things were deeply intertwined in the 1890s.
As you go on further around the corner, there's a suite of, they look like New Yorker cartoons, super black and white, stylized, kind of cartoony drawings of men and women. And it's all about couples, but they're posed in certain places on couches, at dinner together, at a desk. These are amazingly modern looking works. Who did them and what was the idea of the sequence?
This is a series of beautiful woodcuts by Felix Vallotton, the Swiss artist of the group. And while the other artists worked in kind of a style that sometimes seems a little bit hazy or remote, he had a crystalline style that people referred to as icy, very cool and precise. And in this series of prints, he offers us a view of a man and a woman in an interior. And each scene is different, but in each scene we sense that there's some sort of unspoken drama occurring. When you first see a work, you think, oh, you might see a man and a woman in an embrace, and you think, ah, it's a romantic scene, how lovely. And then as you come up closer, you see the titles. So one of my favorites is a very stark woodcut of a man and a woman looking out over a balcony. At first, you're attracted by the real stark modernity of the style. And then as you come in closer, you see the title is Money. And so what you thought might be a romantic view out the balcony now becomes some sort of negotiation. And again, he confounds our expectations, or he problematizes the situation without actually offering any complete narrative. It is really up to us, the viewers, to divine what is happening. Vallotton was a great pessimist. He said that between men and women, the only relationship is that of victor and vanquished. So sometimes it appears that it is the woman who is the victor. Sometimes it appears that it is the man. But throughout, you get a sense of the drama and duplicity of domestic relations.
These prints sold well, you said, but when he did painted versions of them, they weren't as popular. There's one called 5 o'clock. What's that all about?
In 5 o'clock, there's a man and a woman embracing on a couch. And it seems like, a wonderful private romantic moment. But the title gives you a clue right away that this is not a domestic bourgeois marriage, because the French have an expression, cinq à sept, which means 5 to 7. And that, of course, is the time when adulterous affairs would occur. So audiences would have known right away that we are seeing adultery, which was a really hot topic at the time. And it was seen as a great societal ill. So he's really tapping into current attitudes about adultery and, again, sort of upending our expectations with these paintings.
You go around a corner then, and there is a room devoted to music. So some of these artists, well, they all love music. I mean, that was kind of what you did, right? But some of them made books of sheet music, or like primers, how to think of music if you're a little kid. Talk about those projects.
As you say, all four artists were deeply involved in music. They were surrounded by it, their wives and partners and families all played, and they were friends with musicians of the day. But Pierre Bonnard was probably the most immersed in producing actual music books. He and his brother-in-law, who was a composer, created a little primer for children on basic components of music. And while the text is quite dull, Bonnard's images are really refreshing. They capture complex musical ideas in a really accessible way for young learners. Now, for a curator of prints and drawings, this is particularly exciting, because I feel like when you see an artist draw, you all of a sudden see how he or she thinks. So the studies, which range from highly finished to very sketchy or scribbly designs, really let us into the artist's world of creation. He did a second project with his brother-in-law for adult piano players, and I'm pleased to say that we have that music playing in the room, so visitors can both see and hear the music.
As an illustrator, he was very talented. So to illustrate the idea of a triplet, three notes together, he had three women or girls squished together under one umbrella. And then for two notes, it was two of them under the same umbrella. And then he used like the height of a family to show the progress of an octave. And then the little baby, who's the lowest note, is at the end being lifted up by the mother into the next series of...
I think he was deeply sympathetic to children. He seemed to be able to see the world through their eyes. He valued children He had none of his own, but plenty of nieces and nephews. And I think that critics at the time saw this, and they even referred to him as having like a childlike vision, by which I think they meant he was able to see things in a fresh way. So they're absolutely wonderful drawings and quite humorous. The more you know about music, the more one can enjoy them. He puts in all sorts of little visual puns.
And who is Missia?
Viewers will see lots of depictions of a woman named Missia Natanson. She was married to Tade Natanson, who was the publisher of La Revue Blanche, a very influential art journal, and a great patron of the Nabi artists. Now, Missia was known for being very beautiful and very flirtatious. She was also a great musician. In the music room, you'll see three depictions of Missia by three different artists, and it really speaks to her importance as a source of inspiration, and also just the fact of how closely intertwined she was in the lives of these artists.
There's a beautiful painting of someone washing a baby, and the woman has the baby on her knee and is sort of dealing with the sponge and then balancing the baby, who's has its own sense of balance. Who is that painting by?
So this is now into the section we talked about family life. And this is by Maurice Denis. Denis is probably the star of this section. He was the only artist to marry and have children during this time. His wife, Marthe, became his favorite model and muse, and he was absolutely delighted with his growing family. So you see a portrait of Marthe holding baby Bernadette on her lap and bathing the child. And it's one of these modest acts of life that Bonnard refers to, but it also feels somewhat sacred. She's posed in a beautiful, balanced position, and he energizes the entire composition with these wonderful stripes streaming down her dress. He was deeply, deeply religious. And so for him, images of his wife and daughter also echo images of Madonna and Child paintings that he would have seen in Italy or in the Louvre there in Paris. So he takes a very mundane task, you know, bathing a child, and infuses it with some of the sacred. And you see that throughout his art, where some of these simple tasks of life really get treated with great reverence.
There's another interesting one, a woman sitting there and the baby is on the floor, and the baby's either ripped up a piece of paper or maybe it's broken white crockery, and the mother's just sitting back, not doing anything. I think she has a little smile on her face. Who is that by?
Joseph, you're referring to a work by Felix Vallotton, and it's called The Red Room. It has been like a Rorschach test in this exhibition, because when I take people through, some people react and see this as a painting of deepment between the adult woman and the child at her feet. It's a mother, an aunt and a niece. And others see it as a tired woman just looking down at the child. Others see a hint of a smile, as you point out. But regardless of the interpretation, the fact that it forces us to think about what's happening and try to determine not only the physical relationship between the figures, but the emotional relationship. Is this a scene of estrangement? Is it a scene of fatigue? Is it a scene of amusement? I leave that up for the viewers to decide.
There's a section on people outside. There are gardens, and then there's like the city outside. But there's a beautiful drawing, I think, of a young girl working. She's probably like 7 or 8. She's got this massive basket of laundry, and she's got her back to you walking away, and her eyes on this little stray dog, as though the dog is going to interact with her. And in the sketch, there were humans in the background, adults at the top of the frame. And then in the finished work, they're left out. What does this say about their approach to children?
As you point out, once you leave the family section, you leave the interior and explore outdoor spaces like private gardens and the city. And the drawing and lithograph by Pierre Bonnard depicts a small girl carrying a laundry basket. And this is a working child. The laundry business employed almost 20% of the Parisian population, almost exclusively women and children. And as Bonnard developed this composition, he started with a wide panorama in a sketch that was not able to travel, including lots of figures and adults and people around the street. In the drawing in the exhibition, he's tightened his viewpoint, and you see adults, as you point out. But in the final product, he has eliminated all figures except for the little girl and a stray dog. And he treats them with sort of equal measures of pathos and humor. So there's something really vulnerable about both the girl and the dog, kind of unaccompanied, uncared for. But on the other hand, they have this sort of jaunty independence and agency in the city. And I think this points to how Bonnard was very attentive to the world of children, whether they are his nieces and nephews who are living a comfortable middle class life, or this small girl who is working kind of on the margins of society.
As you leave, you know, the last gallery before you exit, it's a lot of that is devoted to the city. And you said Bonnard did a lot of painting through his window. He didn't go out much, even though this was like the crazy time of the Great Exposition, or just Paris really was really bumping at the time. But he's painting like gloomy night scenes from his window.
Well, I like to joke he would have been a good pandemic artist, because he did many, many scenes just from his studio window of his little slice of the city. What could he see from that one window? And we know he attended the theater and he went to plays, but he liked to kind of take a step back and remain in the interior while depicting the city life. So this isn't the city of the Eiffel Tower and the Grand Boulevards. It's really the city as Parisians experienced it and lived it. It's not the tourist view. It's the quiet neighborhoods, the little tiny views of gardens. Again, as he said, the modest acts of life that comprise our day-to-day activities.
And there are great scenes of, you know, carriages at night and the light reflected, the electric light reflected in the puddles, people jumping puddles. It's it's almost journalism at times.
Yes, and you know, I think it's a perfect show for this time of year. The colors are rich, autumnal, the feeling is cozy. And on those night scenes, Joseph, it feels it could almost be Portland, the way we jump over puddles in the light reflected on the rain on the sidewalks. So I hope that viewers can see, you know, a glimpse of how life was lived in Paris, but also make parallels to our own daily lives and how we are surrounded by the people closest to us and the interiors so familiar after 2 years of quarantine and shutdown.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was Mary Weaver Chapin. She's the curator of prints and drawings at the Portland Art Museum. She was talking about private lives, home and family in the art of the Nabi, 1889 to 1900. And that show is on through January 23rd. The Egyptian show ends January 16th, but admission to both is included. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus by Zoom, Mary.
My pleasure, Joseph. I hope we have more conversations to look forward to in the new year.
Hi, this is Joseph Gallivan. Thanks for supporting Community Radio. 80% of our funding comes from our members, so I want you to send some money to KBOO. Go on kboo.fm and look for the big donate button. Thanks.
Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
La ville en fête et en délire, suffoquant sous le soleil et sous la joie. Et j'entends dans la musique les cris, les rires qui éclatent et rebondissent autour de moi. Et perdu parmi ces gens qui me bousculent, étourdi, désemparé, je reste là. Quand soudain je me retourne, il se recule et la foule vient me jeter entre ses bras. Emporté par la foule qui nous traîne, nous entraîne, écrasés l'un contre l'autre, nous ne formons qu'un seul corps. Et le flot sans effort nous pousse enchaîner l'un et l'autre, et nous laisse tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Entraînés par la foule qui s'élance et qui danse une folle farandole, nos deux mains restent soudées. Et parfois soulevés, nos deux corps enlacés s'envolent et retombent tous deux épanouis, enivrés et heureux. Et la joie qu'elle a poussée par son sourire me transperce et rejaillit au fond de moi. Mais soudain, je pousse un cri parmi les rires quand la foule vient l'arracher d'entre mes bras. Emportée par la foule qui nous traîne, nous entraîne, nous éloigne l'un de l'autre, je lutte et je me débat. Mais le son de ma voix s'écoute dans le rire des
Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 21 de diciembre del 2021, el gobierno de Portugal ordenó hoy martes que los bares y clubs nocturnos cerraran las puertas y les dijo a las personas que trabajaran desde casa desde el 26 de diciembre hasta el 9 de enero para controlar la propagación del COVID-19 durante el periodo de vacaciones. El primer ministro Antonio Costa también anunció que se requeriría una prueba de coronavirus negativa para permanecer en los hoteles portugueses y dijo que las autoridades limitarían las reuniones al aire libre a 10 personas por grupo en la víspera.